Job 38. We left off with the little pile of ashes and a man called Job sitting in the midst of a storm. Remember that in chapter 37? This is Job as he's argued for the opportunity to speak to God, and now God comes to speak to him. This is a remarkable chapter. I've been looking forward to it for some time. The mark of a good teacher, and we have several in our midst tonight, is that he brings where his students have left off. He begins right there where he's left off with them, goes to their level, and begins to teach right where they're at. And he will teach Job this evening as we unveil the truth here that is in these chapters. He will meet Job on that pile of ashes in the midst of a storm, if you will recall, and God will begin to teach Job. The Lord Jesus Christ is also a teacher, the greatest teacher, and he wants to teach us today. Notice here as God teaches Job that he begins right where they left off, in nature. They were dealing with nature. It was in the midst of a storm. The weather was bad, and it came upon them. A storm was whirling about when Elihu was talking. He mentioned it several times. And then God breaks in as the creator. He begins there, and he will begin this, begin to speak to this man where he wants to bring him. He will nurture him along right where he's at to where God wants to take him. And that's the signs of a great teacher. Taking somebody, meeting them right where they're at, nurturing them along, and putting them where they have predetermined that they're going to take them. And this is what Jesus does with us in the New Testament. As man to reach his heart, he will take him to a place that he wants him to be. He teaches by principles. I love the way Jesus teaches. In fact, I was known in Roseburg as the guy that authored truck driver theology. You've heard me say this before. But really, you ask anybody that went around Roseburg Christian Fellowship, and they knew who you were talking if you mentioned the truck driver theology, because I would talk about things that I was working with in my life, my everyday work, and how the word applied to that. And I got that from the parables Jesus would teach. He'd be walking along with a man, and they'd be out in a farm field, walking along on a path, and he'd give principles of how the seed would be sowed and how it applied to each and every person, different types of soils. And you know the story of the parable of the soils. That's the way Jesus taught. He taught many things in principles of life by just using surroundings. And that's a really awesome way to teach. Let's get right into it. Verse 1. Then the Lord answered Job. Notice he answered Job out of the whirlwind and said. Now I got to stop right there. The storm had come upon Job there in a full force. And out of the whirlwind God speaks. And man, I'm telling you, this is the way God does so many times with us. You can call it whatever you want as in place of the whirlwind, but in trials, tribulation that oftentimes seem to me like whirlwinds, God speaks. And it's in the midst of a storm that God speaks loudly. It may be in the middle of a very heated argument with your spouse. Well, I've been there. God speaks to your heart. It may be in the middle of the pressure you're feeling from all those unpaid bills and not knowing how in the world you're going to ever meet those needs. It may be in the middle of a personal loss. Wherever it is, listen to him very carefully, because when God speaks, he has very important things to say. Verse 2, who is this who darkens counsel by words without knowledge? If we had any doubt about the words Job was saying, God clears it up for us right here. Now, I have taught Job with a certain perspective, and I've mentioned this several times as we've gone through it, I believe God was dealing with Job. Not only was he dealing with Satan, as we found out in the very first chapter, that was laid out there very clearly, but he was also dealing with Job. Job had a pride issue, and God is dealing with that pride issue. He's saying, Job, listen, all that knowledge and all these things that you talked about, you displayed about, they were dark and they weren't good. There are many today in our culture that talk a lot. You know, there's, 37 chapters of chatter here? And we went back and forth with it for several months here, looking at these and did a lot of talking. And oftentimes I went, man, this is just repetitious. You know, it's just over and over and over. And yet, we gleaned and pulled some very clear truths and principles out of that. But it reminds me of all the talk that goes on today with so many people. Take, for instance, talk shows. How many hours of the day is spent on television with talk shows and different approaches with different subjects and, you know, Oprah Winfrey, however you say her name, she's retiring after 25 years or something like that, and there's a big thing going on. Man, forever. I saw a thing on the internet this morning. A conservative guy was saying, yeah, she spent 25 years pulling all the listeners to the liberal left. And now somebody like Sarah Palin would take her place and pull them all back with a bunch of words to the conservative right. You know, and I look at that and say, yeah, but when in all those years, what has she said that applied for eternal values? Well, I don't know. A lot of words, though. Got a lot of ratings. Made a lot of money. But a bunch of useless words for the most part. I haven't watched a lot of her, but some of the shows I've watched, I wouldn't even admit that I watched them. Man, they get down into the nasty stuff. Now, prepare yourself like a man. I will question you, and you shall answer me. Verse 3. Job, stand up and listen to me. I've got something to say to you. I created you. Have you ever been in one of those times with the Lord where the Lord almost takes you to the woodshed? I've been there. And he says to Job, I've got 60 questions for you. So get it ready. Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Verse 4. Tell me. If you have understanding. You know, a question like that will get your attention. Where was I when he laid the foundations of the earth, I ask. I was in his plan. Katie Hunt was in his plan. Jason Brown was in his plan. We were all in his plan when he laid, or even before he laid, the foundations of the earth. How do we know that? Well, Jeremiah, you can jot these down and look at them later on. Jeremiah 1:5 refers to that very thing. Ephesians 1:4, before the foundations were even laid, God knew me. And that, to me, is unbelievable. I know it's above my comprehension, but it is true. Job, tell me, God says, if you are smarter than I. Woo. Who determined its measurements? Verse 5. Surely you know. Or who stretched the line upon it? To what were its foundations fastened? Or who laid its cornerstone? We think we know so much with our science. You know, we even in higher education, I'm not against higher education, but I get really upset that the arrogance that tends to be there with how much knowledge. But really, the knowledge they find out in that is that God has already, I mean, they're just discovering things God has put in place. If they would pay attention to the Bible, I think they would be light years ahead. the beginning of wisdom is to fear God. When the morning stars sang together, and all the sons of God shouted for joy. You know, the morning stars that are speaking here and the sons of God refers to the angels of the heavens. Get this picture. They were all singing when God was creating in those 6 days. Can you imagine that? Whom? Here, there's the sun, there's the earth, there's the oceans, there's the mountains. You know, he's creating the animals, he's creating even mankind, and they're in the background singing. I wonder what they were singing. Millions of angels, the morning stars, the sons of God. Or who shut in the sea with doors, verse 8, when it burst forth and issued from the womb, when I made the clouds its garment and thick darkness its swaddling band. This most likely alludes to the water canopy that surrounded the planet before the flood, you know, before the times of the ark and Noah and that sort of thing. Evidently, there was a water vapor canopy above the Earth's atmosphere. And that provided really protection from the harmful rays of the sun. So therefore, man grew to be old in years, like 900 to 1,000 years. Animals were huge. We had the dinosaurs. Yes, the dinosaurs are real. I was listening to Chuck Smith's talk show today, and some lady called in, and she was chuckling. She says, some guy was telling me that the book of Job was, and it got my attention right away, says that there was dinosaurs. And Chuck Smith says, yeah, that's right. She goes, what? What? Well, it's true. We're going to visit that here in a few minutes. But there was this greenhouse effect about the entire planet. And this would explain, listen, this would explain the frozen vegetation that has been discovered below the ice caps in the Arctic Circle. How else would they get there unless there was a vegetation involved the whole parts of the earth? When I fixed my limit for it and set bars and doors, when I said, this far you may come, but no farther, and here your proud waves must stop. By far the majority of the earth is water. What is it? I don't know, 2/3 or something like that. But there's much more water on the earth than there is land. And God set the boundaries of how much there should be. Have you commanded the morning since your days began and caused the dawn to know its place? He says, I cause the sun to rise every day so perfectly that you can set your watch by it. In verse 13, that it might take hold of the ends of the earth and the wicked be shaken out of it. It takes on form like clay under a seal and stands out like a garment. From the wicked, their light is withheld, and the upraised arm is broken. Have you entered the springs of the sea, or have you walked in search of the depths? Have the gates of death been revealed to you, or have you seen the doors of the shadows of death? You know, what God was asking here is that, do you really know what is beyond life? Do you know what is beyond this life? Do you know what's going to happen after death, Job? And that's a question, really, that causes many of us to come to his very throne room for the answer. And we find it in Jesus Christ. I am so glad we have the Bible. I'm so glad that we don't live in the days of Job without the Word, where you would have to depend on a set of rules and regulations and the law and a prophet. Then again, things were much simpler in those days. They lived life to the fullest. But I am so glad that we have Jesus Christ, His written Word, His plan of salvation laid before us. And all we really have to do is choose to follow it or reject it. And the choice is ours. Verse 18, have you comprehended the breadth of the earth? Tell me, if you know all this, where is the way to the dwelling of light and darkness? Where is it? Where is its place, that you may take it to its territory, that you may know the paths to its home? Do you know because you were born then, or because the number of your days is great? You know, in Job's days, they didn't have a clue how deep the ocean was, for instance. And to this day, right now, we've discovered the deepest part, we think, that is about 7 miles deep, as best we could measure. And as for the reaches of space that's mentioned here, Voyager 2 spent 12 years, think of that, 12 years going over 4.4 billion miles in 1989, and it passed Neptune's cloud bank within 3,000 miles. And that's as far out of exploration that we have really had. And it's amazing how big the universe is. How big. We just barely have started. It's endless. And he says, God says to Job, do you know the depths of the outer space of the ocean? In verse 22, have you entered the treasury of snow? Or have you seen the treasury of hail, which I have reserved for the time of trouble, for the day of battle and war? God says, now, snow and hail, we can use them in times of war. He says, I have. So what about that? Historically, if you look back into history, snow was what really defeated Napoleon in his invasion to Russia. It also was what defeated the German army when they went in World War II. Hitler decided to take Russia, and it was the Russian winter that brought him to a halt. They blitzed across the majority of Russia, killed thousands and thousands of people, and almost succeeded before the Russian winter, the snow, defeated their advancement. Prophetically, in the book of Revelation, hailstones, listen to this. You probably already know this, having read Revelation, but hailstones will weigh more than 100 pounds as they pelt the earth during the tribulation period. Amazing, isn't it? And yet God says there, my treasury of snow, my treasury of hail in time of trouble. 24, by what way is light diffused, or the east wind scattered over the earth? You know, we know that light can be separated, but we really don't know how. Who has divided a channel for the overflowing water, or a path for the thunderbolt, to cause it to rain on a land where there is no one, a wilderness in which there is no man, to satisfy the desolate waste and cause to spring forth the growth of tender grass? Has the rain a father, or has begotten the drops of dew? Or excuse me, who has begotten the drops of dew? From whose womb comes the ice and the frost of heaven? Who gives it birth? The waters harden like stone, and the surface of the deep is frozen. Can you bind the clusters of Pleiades or loose the belt of Orion? To be sure, God's words are full of the opposite meaning of the literal words used, but that's what Job needed to puncture his pride. There's a little in these rhetorical questions, there's a little bit of sarcasm given on to Job, and it brings him to his knees in repentance eventually. How much did Job know about the rain? That's what God wants to know. How much do you know about it? Its origins, how it came, Did he know how to plot its course so that it could accomplish God's purposes? Could he tell the lightning where and when to flash? Well, that's amazing. I talked about that last week. Every night on the news, I like to watch the weatherman, Matt, on Channel 8 there, and he always gives how many strikes of lightning. And tonight there was a lot of them. I forget the number, but it was in the hundreds. And that's pretty amazing. And yet God knows every strike, and he directs every strike. That's amazing. Could he tell the lightning where to flash? Was he able to father rain and dew so that the land would have the water that it needed? You know, our lands are divided by deserts and rainforests and whatnot, and it's all because of the water and where it accumulates and where it doesn't. It's amazing. God can explain these things, but Job, can you? Can you explain why he sends rain to places where nobody lives? Then God turned from the spring and the autumn rains to the winter hail and frosts. Job, can you explain that one? If Job didn't know how the rain was fathered, did he understand how the ice was born? Oh. Who controls and places the stars, Job? About this time, I'd probably be feeling about this high as I sit on my little ash heap. Can you bring out Maseroth, verse 32, in its season? Or can you guide the great bear with its cubs? Do you know the ordinances of the heavens? Can you set their dominion over the earth? Can you lift up your voice to the clouds that an abundance of water may cover you? Can you send out lightnings that may go and say to you, here we are? Who has put wisdom in the mind? Or who has given understanding to the heart? Who can number the clouds by wisdom? Or who can pour out the bottles of heaven? When the dust hardens in clumps and the clods cling together, can you hunt the prey like for a lion, or satisfy the appetite of the young lions when they crouch in their dens or lurk in their lairs to lie in wait? Who provides food for the raven when its young, when its young ones cry to God and wonder about for lack of food? You know, Job is asked, Job, if you understand so much about the heavenly bodies, as you have said for the last how many chapters, if you have understanding of all these different things that are thought by some to affect the earth, then why don't you use your authority to change your situation? Whoa. If you're so good and wise and in control and all that sort of thing, Job, why are you sitting on an ash heap with boils? The Lord was speaking with holy sarcasm and not revealing some profound truth, as some try to point out in here. In verses 34 and through 38, the Lord called Job's attention to the clouds. Since Job knew the laws of the heavens, could he order the clouds to give rain? Was the lightning his servant reporting for duty? Could Job take inventory of the clouds and tip them over like jars to make the rain come? No. No, Job was powerless, really. And God was pointing it out clearly. Creating all these things is one thing. Maintaining them for man's good is quite something else, isn't it? The Lord not only creates, but he sustains. The Lord moved next into the series of questions about his providential working in the world. You see, often we question God. I've heard it many times. I've spoke it myself. We question God for the most part. We don't get the answer, but God says, I am the answer. I am the answer. Come to me, and I will be your answer. So let's get right into verse 39 there, first four verses. Do you know the time when the wild mountain goats bear young? Or can you mark when the deer gives birth? Can you number the months that they fulfill? Or do you know the time when they bear young? They bow down, they bring forth their young, they deliver their offspring, their young ones are healthy, they grow strong with grain, they depart and do not return to them. God now turns to the presence, at least in Job's situation. He's talking about history and he's talking about all the things that he'd done in creation, but now he's turning to the present and he starts speaking as the sustainer of all life. He will continue on his 60 questions to Job. And notice, Job has not given an answer to a single one. He doesn't have any time to answer, apparently. God didn't even give him any time. He's just like, bam, 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 one right after another. Who set the wild donkey free? Verse 5. Who loosed the bonds of the onager? Whose home I have made the wilderness and the barren land his dwelling? He scorns the tumult of the city. He does not heed the shouts of the driver. The range of the mountains is his pasture, and he searches after every green thing. Now we're going to get into the discussion of, I don't know, the onager or the onager, or however you want to pronounce that. That's a wild donkey. It roamed the wilderness freely, and it refused to be domesticated. It was not the donkey that we see in the fields today. It survived without human assistance because God taught it how to take care of itself. And there are many wild animals out in the wilderness that take care of themselves totally. Their ecosystem, if you will, is fully intact, and God takes care of the animals. Will the wild ox be willing to serve you? Will he bed by your manger? Can you bind the wild ox in the furrow with ropes? Or will he plow the valleys behind you? Will you trust him because his strength is great? Or will you leave your labor to him? Will you trust him to bring home your grain and gather it to your threshing floor? This is interesting. And if you have a King James Version, it reads very differently. The New King James takes out some meaning here, so this is a place that you really want to look at different translations to get the full meaning. Oftentimes I will read three or four translations in studying a passage. There was an implied contrast between the wild donkey and the tame donkey, obviously, there in verses 5 through 8. Here there is an explicit contrast between the wild ox and the tame ox. Well, this animal, this wild ox, in the New King James Version, as it describes, is taken from the Hebrew word of rem, R-E-M, and it is translated to the King James Version as unicorn. And you say, oh, unicorn? Oh, that sounds weird, Larry. But that's what it is. And the Vulgate translation calls it the rhinoceros or rhinoceros. And it's believed to be now extinct. That animal that is now believed extinct is A-U-R-O-C-H-S. Connie, how do you pronounce that? Aurox or something like that? A-U-R-O-C-H-S. H-S.
Oh, the
aurochs. Aurochs, okay. The aurochs is what this animal we believe is being talked about as the wild ox. Now, next to the elephant and the rhino, it was the largest and the most powerful land animal in Job's time, in the old Bible world. Most of the nine Old Testament occurrences of this word make reference to it as the symbol of strength. And truly it was. If you want some references with this same word, Numbers 23:22, Numbers 24:8, Deuteronomy 33:17, and Psalms 29:6. Those are just a few that I found. And so, you know, these are verifiable things in the Bible. These are really what we would call dinosaurs as such. They were unusually large animals, very powerful. And God just simply says, Job, are you going to throw a harness around these? Are you going to plow? How can you do such a thing? It was already rare in Palestine in the time of Moses. And once again, it's a bit of divine Father God humor to have mentioned the possibility of this fearsome creature harnessed to Job's plow, working his fields, and tied up in his barn. I like how God works this. Now, this is another great section here. The next five or so verses, 13. The wings of the ostrich wave proudly, but are her wings and pinions like the kindly stork's? For she leaves her eggs on the ground and warms them in the dust. She forgets that a foot may crush them, or that a wild beast may break them. She treats her young harshly as though they were not hers. Her labor is in vain without concern, because God deprived her of wisdom and did not endow her with understanding. When she lifts herself on high, she scorns the horse and its rider. You know, the lesson is that God can, listen to me carefully here, God can and does make creatures that appear odd and crazy to us if that pleases Him. And He does the same thing with human beings. We're all a little different. Imagine a bird like the ostrich that can't fly, but it can flap. It's got wings and it flaps its wings. It can run faster than a horse. It can run at short distances up to 35 miles an hour. Yet the ostrich lays its eggs and forgets where she laid them. And other animals come along and they, you know, step on them, break them, and, you know, they're a pretty big egg. And yet she hasn't got that natural nature motherhood instinctive in her. She's kind of a loose cannon. Job couldn't understand what God was doing in his life. And God was telling him, the created world is just as difficult to rationalize. This is phenomenal. It shows the mindset of God, where He says, you're never going to figure it out, guys, gals. You're never going to figure it all out. There's things that I do in nature and in human beings that you won't understand. You may not be able to understand God sometimes, but He is God. He is God. He is God. And He knows all things. That's the bottom line principle that He's trying to get across here. Verse 19, have you given the horse strength? Have you clothed his neck with thunder? Can you frighten him like a locust? His majestic snorting strikes terror. He paws in the valley and rejoices in his strength. He gallops into the clash of arms. He mocks at fear and is not frightened, nor does he turn back from the sword. The quiver rattles against him, the glittering spear and javelin. He devours the distance with fierceness and rage. Nor does he come to a halt because the trumpet has sounded. At the blast of the trumpet, he says, aha! He smells the battle from afar, the thunder of captains and shouting. This is one of the most poetic ways that God describes the war horse in an amazing way. poetic literature style. There are people that aren't Christians that study these sections just for the poetry. It's amazing. He's saying, Job, I have taken a powerful thing like the war horse, and I've formed it to be fearless in battle. Can you do that, Job? Does the hawk fly by your wisdom, Job, and spread its wings toward the south? Does the eagle mount up at your command and make its nest on high? On the rocks it dwells and resides, on the crag of the rock and the stronghold. From there it spies out the prey. It eyes observe from afar. Its young ones suck up blood, and where the slain are, there it is. You know, the migratory instincts of birds is God-given. Some birds have tremendous instinctive abilities. It's amazing. Who put it in the mind of the golden plover to fly from Alaska to the Aleutian Islands in the springtime in order that they might hatch their eggs and raise their babies in Alaska in the springtime? Who put it in the mind of that plover to fly 2,000 miles over uncharted oceans and land up there in the Aleutian Islands? Amazing feat. And then after that, they have their little ones, and as the winter is approaching, the little golden plover turns around and he flies back to Hawaii. And who guides it? It's just a little bird. Who's given its instinctive guidance system that it can fly over 2,000 miles of ocean nonstop and land by careful navigation there in Hawaii? And I know there's people that say, well, you know, the memory, they've got a great memory. They, you know, they instinctively follow that scent or whatever. They go through these trade winds, these crosswinds, these jet streams that are so forceful in the hundreds of miles an hour, blows them off course. They're out of their beeline. They're blown off course, but yet instinctively they come back and they land in Hawaii. And they have young that are born that have never been to Hawaii, that are raised up in Alaska, and after 2 weeks of their parents leaving, they are able to find their way to Hawaii. Who does that? That's just one story of nature. It's phenomenal to look at the hand of God. How do they figure it all out? That's the mighty God that you and I serve. He says, Job, I know you're hurting. I know you've been through a lot. But what is all this talk? Who am I, Job? Where are your eyes? Where's your heart? Are they on me? Or are they on your problem?